This is Pretty Much Pop, a culture podcast living off the blood of popular culture while partying like it's 2025. Today we're discussing vampires in light of the recent release of the Robert Eggers film Nosferatu, as well as wrapping up the six-season TV show What We Do in the Shadows. I'm Mark Lintzenmeyer, and obviously I want to suck your blood.
I'm Al Baker, and nobody crosses the threshold of that invitation, surely.
I'm Sarah Lynn Bruck, and I would just like to say yes, Feratu. Trying to keep it positive this year.
That was incredibly terrible. My name is Lawrence Ware, and Tom Cruise is my favorite vampire of all time.
Actually, a respectable take.
That is not true. That is not true.
Not the role he played, just him, him as an individual.
That's why he continues to look so young.
As a Dianetics supporter. Maybe Dianetics is a code name. I'm going to get on some sort of list if I talk in this way. Scientology is the vampire society giving it some legitimation.
Watch it. You're flirting with going down the bad list. Don't do that. Don't do that, Mark.
So I was skeptical about doing this as a New Year's episode because it's like Halloween was just yesterday. We just did Dracula.
It's always Halloween in my life. It never ends. Every day is Halloween.
But the lining of these two things, right? So the Nosferatu film, which everybody seems to enjoy and maybe is the Golden Globes. Actually, was the Golden Globes include?
No, it didn't include Nosferatu.
I didn't see it.
All right. But you're thinking that it might be an Oscar. There's going to be some Oscars involved.
I definitely think, yeah. It's going to be something Oscar related, yeah.
And then just the, of course, this is just a perennial topic that we could talk about at any point. So how many people have, I had only gotten through three seasons of What We Do in Shadows and I've been binging it and I didn't quite finish it. I'm like an episode and a half. If we did this an hour later, perhaps I could have finished it off. But we're not going to spoil the ending of that series anyway, right?
Correct. It's over.
Is the series over?
I also didn't finish What We Do in the Shadows, so...
I'm not a big fan of that show. I tried to like it. It just... Something about it didn't appeal to me.
Oh my God. I adored that show.
Well, I think we've established Lawrence doesn't like funny things. I think we've established that.
That's not true.
No sense of humor.
It's beginning to look like that because of Steve Martin and now this, but I promise you that's not true. Dave Chappelle, big fan.
And he's been a black vampire at some point. Oh, well, Eddie Murphy.
Eddie Murphy.
I did not see his black vampire movie.
I did. It's terrible, but I watched it.
It's a very flexible format. I was thinking that, you know, obviously the Bram Stoker novel, which I listened to about the first half of it on audiobook. I didn't remember being so long. I think the version that
it's very dense.
The version I had as a kid was like an abridged kid-friendly version or something like that. So I had never experienced the whole novel. I didn't realize there were these multiple episodes and the multiple women and like that's how they can drag it out quite so far in such a way that a single movie is never going to do justice to, you know, a big fat novel.
Mm-hmm.
I find that there are a lot of things, like I did watch True Blood and various other things, but I don't tend to just jump and grab every vampire. It's not one of my favorite topics, frankly. What are your backgrounds with this?
I completely forgot. I watched True Blood religiously for years, and I'd completely forgotten that I ever did that until you mentioned it, which I think just shows how much vampire stuff there is, especially, I suppose, if your main point of media maturity like me was in the late 90s, early 2000s. Where I think in the aftermath of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and then Twilight, obviously, there was just this huge explosion of vampire-related material everywhere. So it's just become a kind of subgenre in its own right.
Teenage vampire fiction at Barnes & Noble was a section.
Yeah, I remember that. I do remember that.
Yeah.
So I think Buffy the Vampire Slayer is one of the greatest TV shows ever made, and it will always be like the main vampire thing for me. But vampires are cool, and when they're done well, they can be downright incredible, and they're obviously an integral part of Gothic history. It's interesting that vampires have spun out into their own subgenre in a way that things like Frankenstein or werewolves didn't. Really, I'm not sure why that is, but there's a bunch of vampire stuff. Some of it's really, really good. Most of it's not very good. All of it trades in kind of some of the same themes. Nosferatu is fantastic. I hope we get to talk about that a little bit more. But vampires have just been really ever present for me.
Yeah, I'd have to say they've been ever present for me too. But I had, during the explosion of vampires between Buffy the Vampire Slayer television show and like the Twilight era, I was deep into my own life, such as finally getting a career and having a kid and all of that kind of stuff. So that time, it kind of just went over my head. I felt like it was stuff for a different audience. It just wasn't an audience that wasn't me. But I remembered very fondly the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie. I loved that movie so hard. And when I was in college, I read Dracula as part of a gothic literature course, which I highly recommend. That was so much fun. It was so much fun reading those books. And especially with Dracula, it was a total highlight just to explore sexuality during that time, specifically female sexuality. And that was a hoot. But for me, that whole list of television shows and movies that came out right at the turn of the 21st century kind of went past me because of just of where I was in my life at the time.
I love vampires. That should be no surprise to the listener. I am the horror guy here. Although I low-key think Al is kind of a horror guy. He just doesn't want to admit it. He doesn't want to come to terms with who he is as a person. But I love horror movies. I love everything to do with vampires. So I didn't know, Mark, that they had a children's abridged version of Dracula.
That is really interesting.
That just seems like to go against the spirit of what that book was kind of doing.
Young readers, let's say that. I had a compilation that was like Frankenstein, Dracula, and Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in one volume.
Okay.
Which I enjoyed. I had on my shelf for many years.
I go deep with them. I loved Dracula. I think I read that way too young, probably middle school. And then I read all of the vampire. I didn't like the witch stuff, but I liked all the vampire stuff from Anne Rice. So Interview with the Vampire, Lestat, all that stuff. I read all that stuff. The earlier stuff was better. I think the later stuff kind of went off and tailed off a little bit sometimes. Goodness. I mean, Salem's Lot by Stephen King was a touch point for me. You know, so I really, really enjoyed vampire stuff. And I like vampire movies like Fright Night, the one that came out in the 80s. The remake that came out last year was decent. It wasn't great. It was decent, though. The Last Voyage of the, oh, what was the name of it? Demeter, I think it came out 2023. Mm-hmm. Watched that, loved that as well. Also, Blackula, that was one thing that really kind of appealed to me, Blackula, that 70s movie. So it said this black character was made by Dracula, and so it continues that. I loved vampires. I just loved it. And I love all the fun iterations of it. I didn't get into the Twilight stuff, and I've never watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but I do like that the vampire tales and the vampire lore are applicable to really any generation, you know, so it can be put in a black kind of setting. I've never read it, but I've seen that there's like vampire sexy stuff out there in the world, right? It's just that vampire stuff is very malleable. You can apply it to many different things. And so coming to this film, we can get into it if you guys want to. I really enjoyed that it kind of went back to its roots. I really liked that. And it held true to that. So yeah, I love vampire stuff. I've loved it for many, many years. And honestly, I wanted to be a vampire until I realized that I would have to live for a long time and have to watch people like Sarah and Mark die and make me not want to do it.
That's very kind of you.
Well, and there's a Blackula movie reboot that is will come out this year, supposedly.
Yeah, and then also my friend Rodney Barnes wrote a graphic novel called Blackula Return of the King. I got a autographed copy of that. Got to go to the release party of that. So yeah, I love vampire stuff, man. I just love it.
I'd like to see a reboot of Love at First Bite. Anybody?
I don't think I know
I
that.
I barely
that?
Remember it.
Is that
Jim Carrey?
What is that?
Is that Jim Carrey?
79. No. 79. George Hamilton as Count Dracula.
Oh, okay. I did see that. What was the Jim Carrey one?
I don't know.
Once Bitten.
Oh.
Yeah, Once Bitten.
1985.
That was kind of a fun movie, if I remember correctly. Also, there was a really fun movie that came out a couple years ago called Renfield. It didn't make any kind of, it have any kind of traction as far as the box office was concerned.
God, it was so good.
It was good. It was very fun. Nicholas Holt was really good in that movie.
And also, Nicholas Cage was obviously Dracula in that one, but he was a producer on the other Nosferatu with Shadow of the Vampire. He was a producer on Shadow of the Vampire. He really sought to see that one through. So I thought it was funny. He originally, I think, wanted to play Nosferatu or the Willem Dafoe character, and he bowed out.
He would not have been able to do what Willem Dafoe did. If I remember correctly, that was a big Oscar movie that year. It was nominated for a lot of things. That was a really good movie.
I think it was. Yeah, it was nominated for stuff. But I don't even remember it when it came out, but I watched it yesterday and was absolutely delighted.
Very good.
So historically, I liked what we did with Santa Claus, and I tried to look up a little bit. You know, of course, it's not like Bram Stoker invented the character, but it's, you know, he invented the modern version of it. I'm seeing Wikipedia tells me 1819, The Vampire, you know, P-Y-R-E, by John Polidori. This was a very successful, put the modern sophisticated vampire. So the whole 19th century, since Bram Stoker is 1897, was a buzz. That's why, you know, gothic horror, because it literally, those books were written in that time with that architecture and that sort of thing. So we're just sucking the blood of that past era by our continued enjoyment of this. And of course, one of the appeals of this immortal character is like, I've seen some stuff. You know, somebody who connects us to the past in a way that we're,
right.
I found all these themes that I was looking at is we're ambivalent about it. You know, on the one hand, it's a terrible thing. They're evil. It's a curse, the curse of vampirism. It's a source of fear. It seems like the images of vampires that went back in history, they're just another monster. It's just, you know, a thing connected, you know, to the vampire bat and vampirism, things that happen in nature, but just like a thing that is out there that is the boogeyman that can kill you. And it's only that it's sort of individuated as it has come along later.
Sarah, I'm interested in your, so you're the expert here on literature. And so I'm interested in that course that you took about gothic horror. What do vampires symbolize? Like all that stuff. Like what's going on there? What kind of stuff did you read and what were they teaching you about what vampires are supposed to symbolize?
Yeah, what was going on that connects this and Mary Shelley and all that stuff?
Well, just it's been such a long time, but Mary Shelley stuff was before that gothic period. It was really in the late 19th century where I think as a culture, or British culture anyway, and Al, let me know if I'm getting this wrong, because it has really literally been a very long time since I've taken that class. But it was connecting that Victorian era that was trying to suppress women's sexuality specifically, and a lot of the art that was coming up at the time, including literature, was exploring those themes and how it was affecting women. I think there was also a lot of literature, there was some literature that was exploring gay sexuality as well during the time.
Interesting.
But it was mostly directed at women. Mm-hmm. That's a fun class to take as a college student.
And this gives me an opportunity to get on my high horse and talk about how horror provides a wonderful opportunity to explore all these different kinds of themes. Now, back to this, I think that the Nosferatu film, because I've heard a lot of chatter about this film, and some people like Sarah, Mark, I haven't heard what Al thought. You guys love it because you guys are film people. You understand what you're looking at and you see it. A lot of people are like, this is slow. Not enough is happening. But that's gothic. Like, that is what this is. You know, and so I felt that that film, more than any other really recent vampire film, is really true to its gothic origins, right? He goes over the top to try to, Eggers does, the director, goes over the top to make sure this is a gothic vampire tale. I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed how he like put that front and center.
I wasn't even aware before this came out sort of what the relationship between Nosferatu and Dracula was, that Nosferatu as a 1922 silent film was a ripoff, was a, let's change the
complete
name,
ripoff,
German expressionist thing that got sued and we almost don't have access to it anymore because most of the copies were destroyed because of a copyright lawsuit.
Right.
That was successful and, you know, only branched off and became its own thing. But yeah, I like how it is the more traditional monster. Like he's actually dead.
Yes.
Like he's actually a corpse with worms crawling out of him. And there's nothing to us that is sexual or appealing to him. We have to just get that through the Lily Rose Depp character and her crazy ass obsession, you know, from childhood that we see, like, yeah, what do we think of this in this version?
Yeah, so I really loved Nosferatu. Interestingly, the thing I really loved about it was I previously loved The Witch by the same director. And what really stood out to me about Nosferatu was how comparatively straightforward it was as a genre movie. It's interesting to hear, I'd no doubt believing that people complain about it being slow or whatever, but those people are completely wrong because for, what's his name? Is it David Eggers or?
Robert Eggers.
No, Robert Eggers. Yeah.
For Robert Eggers' movie, it is so pacey.
It is.
And
it really
punchy.
Is. Yeah.
Like a lot of recent upmarket horror movies have tended towards being very cerebral, and at times I think maybe too cerebral for their own good. People are chasing that like A24 acclaim. And for an upmarket artsy horror movie, Nosferatu is so straightforward. There's no ambiguity, really. There's a lot of artistry, but it is a straightforward monster movie, and it's not confusing. It's not remotely boring. It's really sexy and quite trashy in places, and it's a really good time and showcases a lot of fantastic performance. I mean, everybody loves Willem Dafoe always. What I hope is that he wins an Oscar for this, the Oscar for this movie that he should have won for Spider-Man, and it is just going to be justice.
For Spider-Man? For Spider-Man, you say?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Willem Dafoe's Green Goblin is one of the great villain turns in cinema history.
I'm not going down that rabbit hole.
What I loved about this version of Nosferatu, actually, there are two things that I really loved about this version of Nosferatu. First was Willem Dafoe's character, and he brought a bit of humor and lightness to a movie that just could have just drowned in its own darkness in a lot of ways. And then two, I loved the focus on Lily Rose Depp's character. Is she Mina in this? No, she's Ellen in this one, right? She's Ellen in this one?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah. So I loved the focus on her character. She's so great in this part. But they also, Eggers also gives more time to her journey in this movie because he needs to make that connection between why is Nosferatu obsessed, or Orlok obsessed with her? And he really makes that connection really well that the other two previous films don't do very well. You're thinking, well, you have this guy right here in your house that you could feed on, and he switches it once he sees a picture of her, and that doesn't make that much sense. Whereas in this film, you really see that there's a history between the two and that she is the one who conjures him back to that little small German town.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. So we're into the new year now. Maybe you should just become more the author of your own life, and therapy is a tool you might want to consider to help you do that. Last time that we were sponsored by BetterHelp, they offered me a couple of months of their service free. I had never tried therapy before, and the experience was very informative. Whatever you want to work on about yourself, being more motivated, being less depressed and anxious, maybe bad stuff has happened to you that you want to talk through, therapy can definitely help. And BetterHelp is a very low-risk, low-investment way to try out therapy. The sessions are entirely online. BetterHelp has a diverse network of more than 30,000 credentialed therapists with a wide range of specialties. They were able to pair me very quickly with someone just filling out a little survey. It was very easy to schedule a session very soon, many times available. And if you want to try a different therapist, a different approach, it's very easy to switch. There's no extra cost. BetterHelp serves over 5 million people worldwide. Convenient and affordable. Write your story with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/pretty today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/pretty. I want to tell you about another podcast. It's Gayish. It's an award-winning LGBT podcast. It's about gay stereotypes. Each episode dives into one gay stereotype, and they use history, research, personal stories to determine if the stereotype is true or not. Episodes have ranged from the hanky code and hand jobs to breakup and depression. They've been featured in Oprah Magazine, Esquire, BuzzFeed, Queerty, The Houston Chronicle, and more. Check them out on your favorite podcatcher or at gayishpodcast.com to learn more about the gay community and the stereotypes that attempt to define that community.
Well, I've been confused. Why is it sometimes Mina and sometimes, is it Julie? Who's the other?
Ellen?
In the original Dracula story.
Oh man. I don't remember.
Laura.
Was that Laura
and Mina. So
is it
Lucy and Mina, something like that. Anyway, you know, I've gotten so far in the novel where there's the whole thing with Mina, who is like the friend's wife, not the main guy's wife. I don't know, even in the fact that Renfield is the guy that goes and visits him, as opposed to being Jonathan Harker, as opposed to being the lead. The choices, which I wasn't aware of, that they made even in making that MGM Dracula version of like, well, we got to simplify this. So we're just going to have one guy. We're going to have Renfield is just his own thing. He's not the guy that then will be the hero later or something like that. Cause what sense would that make? But Renfield in the original story, I didn't realize was like in Nosferatu, who is the boss that sends him on this whole thing and then goes nuts. And I don't know. Did everybody watch the silent film version?
Of course I did. Yeah. I watch it every year.
Nosferatu, yeah.
I had never seen that before. Do you guys have any special history with that in terms of, clearly Robert Eggers was like really enamored with that, mm-hmm. was trying to make that version of the Dracula story. I even had heard an interview with him that he had put on a silent on stage version with like fake black and white lighting. You know, that this was, he was enamored with this story from a very young age.
That's too far for me. I mean, so I don't know if I'm going to be canceled here, but Nosferatu is my favorite between that one and the original Dracula. I really like Nosferatu because I just think it's such a interesting character design. Like, it tells kind of the same story, but it's an interesting character design. I really like the direction. I'm very much taken by that form of filmmaking. And so Nosferatu is my favorite one. I think that Dracula is good. I like it. But it's kind of hokey to me in some places. Whereas Nosferatu is genuinely menacing in how the character... Now, you know, you have to kind of get over a dislike of silent films. But, you know, I kind of got over my dislike of silent film when I was in high school. I kind of got deep into them, started watching a lot of silent films then. And so, you know, Nosferatu was always one that stood out, you know, for me. It is up there with Charlie Chaplin's movie, with Buster Keaton's movies, as among my favorite of the silent film eras. Really, really enjoy that film. And so Nosferatu, I have a huge relationship with that. And I think that this one, honestly, this remake, and I'm sure I'm going to let you guys talk in a second, but this remake could have been a silent film. Like he kind of directed it in such a way that if you took the talking and all that stuff out of that, it kind of would have still worked, I thought.
All the way through the recent Nosferatu, the scene composition was so interesting, which I think is partly Eggers doing what he does, but it's also like he's also clearly trying to make an expressionistic film.
Yeah, he's trying to. Or pay homage to it.
Yeah, but it wasn't hokey. Apart from actually, Lawrence, you probably know a lot better than me, but apart from the very famous shadow play stairs scene, I didn't notice any like shot for shot references from the original. Were there more than that?
Yeah, there's some there. But it's not really he's redoing shots. It's more he's paying homage to those shots, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So it's an echo of a shot from the film, but not a redoing of the shot from the film.
But he's going about the filmic expression of the story in a similar way, or in a similar vein, which is such a good way of doing a remake like this. Something else that I just loved about this film is, In a world where the only things that we ever get released in cinemas are sequels, remakes, and retreads of existing IP, the decision to make this film as if it's the first time anyone has made a vampire film, which is what it also seemed like he was doing, is so courageous, and it paid off so beautifully and just makes the film read as an instant classic, as like one of the definitive vampire movies. Because he is referencing other stuff, but it's not like he's playing off the back of the history of vampires. It feels like a completely fresh and original story, even though it's anything but.
As a transitional piece, I tried to watch the Werner Herzog 1979 version, which
I did too.
Uses the like Count Dracula name and stuff, but I guess I only got about a third of the way into it. It was just too dreary for me, and I just decided I would watch another season of What We Do in Shadows instead.
But yeah, Herzog is a weird guy. His movies are strange.
That was such a weird movie. I watched that one yesterday too. I was also thinking of it in terms of like what you said, Lawrence, an homage to the original. And there was so much in there. The actual elongated silences. There was not a lot of dialogue in the 79 version. But I also like that the director decided that Nosferatu was going to be a sad guy. You know, he was just this poor, I felt so sorry for him. I felt this empathy toward him that I didn't feel in the other two versions. Did anybody else see the 79 version of Nosferatu?
Yeah, I powered through that 79 version. I so dislike that movie. Just Werner Herzog just doesn't, he is just not my kind of director. It's definitely a sad puppy version of Nosferatu, but other than that, I really didn't enjoy that much at all.
All of the characters kind of wore the same expression on their faces. Ellen was just perpetually just in like the, she looked like the Scream, like the whole time with her eyes open and, you know, oh my God, you know, and the poor vampire also had the same kind of him and his little overbite, you know, I was not frightened by him at all. I just felt very sorry for him.
The new one then, did it have the actual fright? I mean, certainly the sound design and the shot design and the stuff of her communing with him at a distance and his shadow appearing on the curtains, like all that stuff was beautiful. Did it add up to like it being genuinely frightening? Now, there were gross parts. There were slurping parts.
Yeah, that was disgusting.
But I don't know. I might have to see it again. I was seeing it actually with my daughter and my nieces and my brother-in-law.
Oh, my goodness.
Who are all over 18 or, you know, close to that, at least all of them.
Right.
But I still, like, it was kind of a weird thing.
Yeah, that's not. Yeah.
So I was sort of a little out of my head. Like, what are they going to think of that? I don't know how many actual, I think my daughter's only seen like a handful of horror films ever, but she ended up enjoying it. Maybe I shouldn't have been worried. But yeah, what do we think of the actual scariness? And like, was this the point?
I'm happy you can go see Baby Girl with your daughter.
Yeah, no, don't do that.
It was more horrifying than scary, I think.
I agree. Yeah, I agree.
But it's a horror film, so horrifying is definitely good enough. But you honed in on the blood sucking. Certainly the way that was portrayed was distinctively bestial.
And the biting the heads off rats and things.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that's gross. You know, I think Nosferatu is an interesting, because horror movies don't have to be scary, if that makes any sense, right? Because it's not about jump scare. You know, I took my son to watch a horror movie and he like got so scared the popcorn flew all over the movie theater. Like, and he's never lived that down, by the way. He continues to say that he was startled by me, not the movie. Anyway.
That's cute.
But the reality is that I think Al is onto something. Like, horror movies can be like Frankenstein. It's not a scary movie. The original Dracula, it's not scary, but it's playing with our fears. And so this is a movie that, like, is very much like The Witch, like The Lighthouse, two other Eggers movies. They're like, when you're watching them, you're not terrified as you watch them, but they seek into your unconscious. And you begin to kind of think about them. And they kind of creep you out. And you wake up in the middle of the night, and you're not scared of Orlok standing outside your window, but you're thinking about the horrifying details of that film. And so I think that's what's going on here. Like, this is a film that is not meant to terrify you in the moment, but it's meant to horrify you overall. Mm-hmm. And I think this movie does that pretty well.
I had sort of watching the movie, and I watched it in the theater on Christmas Day.
You went on Christmas?
Merry Christmas.
You went on Christmas. Yes. Oh, my
nothing
goodness.
Nothing says Christmas like a vampire movie, right? And it was completely sold out.
Mm.
It was really fun. I went with my husband and daughter. I felt similarly to when I saw The Exorcist for the first time.
Mm.
You know, it was just like, I felt that there are actually, and I'm sure that he did that on purpose. There were moments in there where I was like, oh my God, this poor girl. I think you said it perfectly, Al. It's horrifying. I was absolutely horrified watching that. And there are certain scenes in there that I will probably never be able to get out of my brain.
And that's the mark of a good horror film.
Yeah, I think so too.
I did not anticipate this movie to make very much money. I just thought that the pacing and the time of the year wouldn't work. This movie's made double its budget. I mean, that's incredible for a movie like this.
Good. Good for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. His whole vibe. Like, I just thought also it was horrifying, but also the movie was really beautiful. You know, just the way that he frames a shot. It's just, I can't get over it. He's just such a beautiful visual director.
He really is.
Yeah, you just mentioned, Sarah, that this is a Christmas movie.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't just come out on Christmas, that they mention that the monster is coming on Christmas and there's like a Christmas tree there. They don't make a big deal about it. The Silent Night doesn't play during any of it, from what I recall.
That'd be pretty twisted, though.
Was Silent Night written at the time of this movie? And that's a deep dive. I don't want to go there.
At the time that it supposedly takes place?
Yeah.
I'd have to probably not. Probably it's one of those. I don't want to speculate. A traditional melody.
Yeah.
Adapted at some point.
Should have had Rudolph in the background. That'd have been wonderful.
So how does he get in the smoke form or whatever across? Oh, he has help. Does he turn into a bat? Does he turn into a wolf? I forget now.
He turns into a reindeer.
In this version, he turns into a reindeer. He's just rats.
Turns into.
Oh, does he?
Okay, I'm sorry, guys.
Gets on a sleigh.
I'm being blasphemous. Let me stop.
His nose turns red after he feeds.
One interesting thing about vampires for me, and definitely in Nosferatu's, vampires are a huge category of thing, and one vampire is not necessarily anything like another. And just talking about Nosferatu is probably the best version I've seen of one particular kind of vampire. One fun thing in what we do in the shadows is that all flavors of vampires are represented, all the main kind of tropes of different kinds of vampires are represented just as different characters. And there is a Nosferatu vampire in what we do in the shadows, and he's just like the old, he's in the movie, I think, isn't he? He's like the really super old one.
Yeah, he is in the movie. I remember that. I do remember that.
Who can barely talk and all that. The thing that always seems to tie vampires together is that they're always about sex of one kind or another.
Always
and I just
sexy.
Wanted to tie this back to the Eggers Nosferatu movie, because what it did so perfectly, the reason I think it's so disgusting, is that it is clearly a movie about sex, and it makes all of the sex deeply gross. And the fact that the Lily Rose Depp character is clearly overwhelmingly attracted to Nosferatu, as her sexual attraction to Nosferatu is maddeningly total, but we get to see what sex with Nosferatu actually looks like, and it's horrifying, and it's constant, and it's all the way through the movie. That's why it's so horrible, essentially, is that vampires are always about sex, and Nosferatu vampires are not pretty to look at.
No, they are not.
Then you get to ask the question of, like, how is each of the different vampires are always about sex, so they're always about sex in different ways.
I mean, the connection between sex and death is, of course, a very primal one, but never has it been so explicit as, like, yes, that's how you defeat the vampire, is you fuck the vampire and it dies and you die. The appeal of it, it's almost like, I don't know about what was going on her, you know, 15-year-old, what they show at the beginning of her. They said she was lonely. She was reaching out. But was it a sort of like teens contemplate suicide, that sort of thing? Is that related in terms of, oh, just come upon me, darkness? Like the overall goth, why kids listen to The Cure.
a risk of bringing the tone of the conversation down. By the end of the movie, I read Nosferatu for Mina as a metaphor for sexual trauma.
Really?
Pretty clearly.
Huh.
The meta-narrative of the movie for me became how that just destroyed her life completely. And like, it's not an upbeat ending. Is she alive at the end, or is that ambiguous? She seemed pretty dead to me.
She's dead.
Yep.
So the meta-narrative of the film for me became like the only way that she's able to vanquish this is by removing herself. Oh, the only way she's able to stop this having an effect on other people is by removing herself from the picture, which is not an encouraging story particularly, but the movie read to me pretty clearly as being about that, specifically because of the way she talks about it in the scenes with Nicholas Holt, and she talks about herself as being like unclean, unworthy, you know, made morally bad by it. It was pretty brutal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he is old.
He is old.
So if the metaphor of like what's happening at the beginning is like, I was socially isolated and I was vulnerable and I found an adult who would have sex with me, and now it's ruined my life.
She tried to move on. She gets married and then he turns up again.
That's an interesting take that is not in the 1922 film. For absolutely.
Yeah,
that
is definitely not there.
Unless I'm missing something.
It's not there. It's not there.
Combining that with, you know, having the most feral version of a vampire in this one is a really strange, interesting choice. I did not even really realize that this was Sarsgaard, Bill Sarsgaard, until
he
played a vampire in, what is the shitty teen?
Vampire Diaries?
No.
It was a Netflix thing.
I was just reading an article in the Times about the three different Nosferatus. And at the end, what struck me is, I'll read the quote. It says, "In these moments, Eggers' Nosferatu, like Herzog's, reminds us that the best remakes are less slavish imitations than cover records, allowing the artist to freely and thrillingly explore their own stylistic preoccupations and obsessions," which is
very well said.
I think that's really well said. That really kind of, that's why they're so, I mean, it's the exact same story, right? And it's a very simple story, but each director, including, you know, that 79 one, which I wasn't fond of either, but every single one of them was able to kind of put their own stamp on it and explore the themes that they wanted to. And I don't think this is, I'm going to go back on something that I said about during our horror episode earlier this year, which is I don't think that it's necessarily bringing something like modern to it necessarily. They're looking at kind of age-old themes that are interesting to each one of the directors. But I don't think that the latest Nosferatu is like a refresh or anything like that. I feel like it's he is absolutely putting his own stamp on it, but it is specific to Eggers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that 70s film is like the alien ant farm of Smooth Criminal by Michael Jackson. Like it is... It is not very good. It is definitely doing something strange. But I will say that all these, not all, but a lot of these performances are really, really good. Like top to bottom, Lily Rose Depp, who had a really rough 2024. If you remember that show that came out on HBO, The Idol.
Never watched it. Thank God.
She had a rough one. She was so good. Nicholas Hoult, really, really good. Bill Skarsgård, completely unrecognizable.
Oh, Hemlock Grove. Oh, I was remember the that show. That was,
yeah, was he in that?
He was the vampire. He was like a Twilight-y, a little more psychotic than that, like definitely. But yeah, the young, hot vampire, not the what he is here.
I remember that show. That was back when Netflix was trying to figure itself out. I remember that. That was back in the day when Netflix wasn't really on top of its game. It was like at the very beginning of Netflix.
2013.
Yeah, even Aaron Taylor Johnson. He was quite good. He was bad in the recent, what was that Marvel movie that came out recently that was terrible? I forgot the name of it.
He's been in like three things this year.
Wasn't he in
I don't see it. He's not in the
Fall
cast.
Fall Guy?
Oh,
he was in Fall Guy. Yes. He was in Fall Guy.
But yeah. I don't think he was, oh, sorry. You're referring to the new film. I'm looking at that. Yeah. I'm the Hemlock Grove cast.
No, not there. No. He wasn't on that. William Dafoe was good. Even, you might not recognize her, but Emma Corrin, who was the big bad in Deadpool and Wolverine. She was good. Like, this was a really stacked cast. Really good cast.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to Simon McBurney, who has been a much beloved star of UK TV.
Yeah, that's Knock. Knock. I remember.
And he
absolutely
smashed that. Like, I've never seen anyone bite a bird's head off with that much enthusiasm since Ozzy Osbourne.
He was great. He was so kooky.
I'm telling you guys, if this movie is not up for Best Director, it will be a travesty. Because this movie is so well directed. And then I would love to see one or two acting nominations from this film. Because I think it's really, really well done. I really enjoyed this film.
And it seemed like a big salute to cheekbones. Did everybody have great cheekbones in this movie? Jesus Christ.
The lighting was definitely highlighting the cheekbones. Oh, yeah. Without a doubt.
So let's go general a little bit. We're in the last 15 minutes here or so. We talked about vampire as just a scary monster, right? As animalistic, whatever. We've talked about vampire as sex symbol a little bit. Vampire as tragic figure. You know, we said there's sad boy vampire. Mm-hmm. And then what we do in Shadows takes each of these things and turns it on its head. Like, oh yes, you're immortal. You outlive all these people that you might fall in love with, all these mortals. But isn't that... Wouldn't you then actually have contempt for them? Wouldn't it be kind of funny how you disregard their welfare in what we do in Shadows? Guillermo character as compared to Renfield, like what is the familiar, the role of the familiar? This allows us to put a human, like who are we supposed to identify with in these things? Like sometimes it is the vampire or the recently turned vampire, like, oh, I'm being tempted by drinking blood. This is like, you know, the forbidden desire. Even Dark Shadows like ended up making the vampire into the main character, but also the potential victims or the person who falls in love with the vampire, the Twilight series. Do you identify with anybody involved?
No.
In these films?
No, I do not.
Because you shouldn't like them. If you don't. Like that's sort of the definition of narrative.
This is so trashy though. But I'm always taken by the guy who just got turned into a vampire and he's trying to fight his urges. And so he's eating raw meat and drinking the blood of animals. And then ultimately he kind of gives in to his cravings. And then kind of, I'm always taken by that. I always like that. I know it's trashy, but it does it for me.
Sorry, vampires are cool though. And partly in the like tortured, like sad goth boy kind of way. So, yes, technically it's a curse, but living forever is like a benefit and there's all the super strength and everything. And like, it's cool to see vampires fighting each other. Blade is an awesome movie.
Blade is an awesome movie. Yes, sir.
There's a lot of ways that you can put vampires in a story and not have them be like evil. They can just be rogue heroes or like anti-heroes of various kinds. But it's interesting, I guess, because you have this whole subgenre of vampire movies where you have to make it perfectly clear that being a vampire is a bad thing morally somehow. It makes you bestial, or it means you're cursed, or it means you're blasphemous or whatever. But like in the Twilight movies, it's not really bad being a vampire. It's just a different way of being. And most of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, right? I mean, even though most vampires are bad, you've got your angels and your spikes and your redeemable vampires who have more backstory. So yeah, I'm going to stick up for the coolness of being a vampire.
The coolness? I don't know that what we do in the shadows necessarily portrays the vampire as cool. I think Guillermo thinks that they're cool.
Yeah.
But Colin Robinson is decidedly not cool. Right? Being an energy vampire?
Well, that's just a funny one-off joke just because of that. And actually making a character that you then have for six seasons.
Oh, God. Stuck to that bit. Oh, he and, what was the other? Vanessa Beyer's character was so funny when
emotional
they worked
vampire,
at that office.
Yes.
She was an emotional vampire. I do know people like that. That's for sure.
Sarah, were you an emotional vampire once upon a time?
I don't know. Maybe in a past life.
I really wish that I liked What We Do in the Shadows more. I liked the movie quite a bit. But the ongoing serial nature of the show, it's just, I don't know, it's just something about it. But I do intellectually appreciate what it's doing. It's just, you know, I hate that I don't like it because I want to like it. Every episode I start off saying, I'm going to like it this time. And I just never do.
I like it a lot. For me, you have to work quite hard for me to not enjoy something that Matt Berry's in, just as a starting point. But no, it's a great show.
Yeah, he immediately won me over. But then the other two leads who I wasn't familiar with, like as it went on, like, oh, I really like these guys. And I like the Colin character as well right off the bat as a shtick. Well, and this is another thing. So are vampires evil, right? Because you're not going to identify, you're not going to feel sympathy with the vampire. You're not going to retain interest in the story if they're actually evil. By doing it in a comedic way, it lets you just, it's okay. To the point that Guillermo, and this is a slight spoiler for a later season, ends up not wanting to kill people. Like he's wanted to be a vampire the whole time. Mm-hmm. But when it actually comes down to it, like, I guess I don't want to murder people, but he is okay. He thinks vampires are cool enough that he's okay. Like, you know, cleaning up the body parts and bringing in victims for the vampires who are just, you can't see them as evil because they're so clueless. They just see themselves as a different kind of being altogether. And so it's just the humor of arrogance of upper class twit of the year of the aristocracy.
They are. They're so self-involved.
I think I'm going to have to just power through that show.
I loved it. I just loved it. And Kristen Schaal was perfection as always.
I just like the fact that special effects are cheap enough that you can have like a talking doll character that persists through season after season. And there's a whole season with Colin Robinson, this adult actor's face on various children.
Yeah.
It looks just the right amount of cheesy. It does not look like so silly, fake. And just the creatures and the puppets and things that they just seamlessly work in.
Mm-hmm. Mm. You know what I love is in that show, they don't shy away from the violence of being a vampire. I mean, that show gets really, really disgusting and very bloody. There's a lot of blood in that show. And I love that they don't shy away from that.
Interesting.
It's a reminder, too, that these are blood-sucking vampires and you don't want to be near them. You really don't. As much as you're laughing at them, you really don't want to be around them.
It's blood in the same way as Monty Python and the Holy Grail, the guy getting one limb chopped off after another and the blood spurting. It's just funny, exploding people violence. It's not even The Boys, which you got to be like, oh, I'm a hard ass. I enjoy this kind of comic book violence. It's like, it's not even that. It's just silly violence.
But I think it's not quite Boys, but I don't think it's necessarily Monty Python either. I think it's approaching Boys. Not quite that bad, but it's approaching it.
Any thought, Al, or did you not get far enough into the show that you care have?
I think the point about the violence, I mean, part of it's just like gross out humor and it's always really surprising. But I was just thinking one of the things I like about What We Do in the Shadows, which has nothing to do with the fact that it's vampires really, is the way that it uses the fly on the wall documentary style, the way it integrates that into the fiction, because the camera crew often find themselves in mortal danger while they're trying to document the goings on of these things. And I do like the way they integrate that. which has nothing to do with them being vampires, really. Vampire comedy is an interesting one because they are so disgusting, and when they're not disgusting, they're supposed to be scary, and when they're not scary, they're supposed to be cool. And there have been a bunch of like vampire comedies in the past, but most of them have been Dead and Loving It was a film I saw a couple of times, once maybe. Mm-hmm. What was the Eddie Murphy?
Is that a Mel Brooks or something?
It's Leslie Nielsen, I think.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. I remember that. Yeah, I remember that.
Oh.
It's not a great movie, but it's just a like...
Oh, it is directed by Mel Brooks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Good.
Like, it's a slapstick vampire movie. And What We Do in the Shadows, I guess, is a really interesting way of doing vampire comedy because it finds the pathetic in the eternal life vampire powers kind of motif and rings that for an awful lot of funny jokes.
Mm-hmm. And it does. It plays with every single one of the themes. I mean, there's also a lot of sexy time too in What We Do in the Shadows. There's a lot of references to that. It's violent, as we said. It's also, they explore their loneliness, their isolation, you know, all of those things. And it's fun to see it. They do such a good job of exploring those themes. And also it's hilarious as hell.
So you're saying they've actually found parts of it touching, that you were able to get enough into their personal struggles that it is making you feel something?
Yeah, actually, I mean, I thought when Nandor was looking for love, I mean, I also just particularly found his character. So he was probably the warmest and fuzziest out of all of them.
I'd put under in my little outline, under the comic potential, this, the appeal to children. Like, it's not an accident that all these sort of monster mash things, and we talked about this in terms of Dracula, and from the horror point of view, the fact that, you know, it was fear of immigrants.
Right.
Like, that this, the fact that they're from some other time and they're invading and they're taking over, that was supposed to be a source of fear. But that's, I don't know, it's hard for me to take that fear particularly seriously, but it does go very closely to a sort of Borat fish out of water. Like, so much of What We Do in the Shadows is, I am a stranger in a strange land and I do not understand your human ways. And when they try to act human and they, you know, it's just, it's, look at me eating human food and doing human things. You know, it's like aliens pretending to be human, that sort of humor. Yeah, just the Count from Sesame Street. I would say, like, why is that? Mm-hmm. It's because people think that Americans think that people with funny European accents, that that's just a funny trope. Why is that not yet objectionable? Like, it seems in most other forms that you can't use that kind of humor is passé, but if it's a vampire, go right ahead.
That's okay.
I don't know why that persists.
What was the movie where the vampire was Jewish?
Oh my.
Do you remember?
I don't remember that one.
And somebody said, I don't know where I read this. I've been reading a lot of stuff about vampires lately. Somebody showed him a cross, you know, and he was like, oh no, that's not going to work on me. I'm desperate to find out what the title of that movie is.
I mean, that sounds like a Mel Brooks joke.
That definitely sounds like a Mel Brooks joke.
Yes.
Maybe you're talking about Dead and Loving It too.
Maybe.
Jewish vampire goes oy vey in Blood Relatives. I don't know. There's an indie vampire thriller. Once we get into this, like, I realize, just pulling up these lists, how many things I maybe had meant to watch, hadn't watched. I watched a number of seasons, probably most of it, of the American version of Being Human, which is another stupid teen one.
I remember that one.
There's a British version too, yes.
Yeah, the British version is fantastic and only stopped being good because the lead wanted to go and be a hobbit. A dwarf, sorry.
Yes, Aidan Turner and Sam Witwer in the American version are both sort of icons in their own right.
Yeah.
Nos4A2, a show I never got around to watching, but I see that, among others, Zachary Quinto as his vampire. I could see that being awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't watch the show. I read the book by Joe Hill. That's is it Joe Hill? Mm. It's Stephen Kidd's kid. Yeah.
Yeah.
The one book of his was kids. Really, really good. The show, I don't see how that show could work off that book. But the book was excellent. It was long as hell, but it was excellent. Also, there's a movie called Let the Right One In. There's an American version of it called Let Me In.
Oh, right.
That was amazing. The original movie was an amazing experience. I will never forget watching that movie in the movie theater. It was so good. It was so good, in fact, I went and got the book that it was based on, and then I realized it was in Sweden. And I got the wrong translation, and so I had to go back buy an English translation. But yes, the movie was amazing.
Yeah, kid vampires raise their own troubling issues.
They certainly do. They certainly do. And Rice played with that.
Anne Rice certainly did. Yeah. You know what? And that's, I don't know if it was you, Al, you were talking about, oh yeah, I forgot I was obsessed with that. I was like, oh, I was obsessed with Anne Rice too. And I can't believe I didn't go back and do a rewatch of that movie, the first movie. But those books, I read those all through college. Oh God.
Well, I see there is a new Interview with the Vampire show that I was not.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Pretty good show.
Any new ground broken in that thematically or narratively that?
Well, yeah, kind of, because the vampire is black. And so it kind of plays with the black experience a little bit. It kind of plays off that a little bit. And it, like, there's more black characters, because it makes sense that if this novel is going to take place in New Orleans, that you should have more black characters involved in it. It's pretty good, man. I'm not going to lie. That first season, second season was okay for me. That first season was gangbusters. It was really, really good.
I experienced in the last year the Octavia Butler novel, Fledgling. Apparently her final book before she died in 2006, about a kid vampire.
Yeah.
And it is very much about racism, like everything she wrote, pretty much.
That's Butler. That's how she is.
Yeah, and because they're, you know, literally a different race, the vampires. Mm-hmm. It has this peculiarity of, they're not just a different race, they're a parasitic race, right? How there's a reason that people are trying to hunt them down and destroy them, because they're creatures of the night who want to kill you. So
absolutely.
I would be interested in a Jewish filmmaker investigating this more, of like how anti-Semitism has worked, and them even using the notion of a parasite or the immigrant experience. Like, I'm sure there's a book that is even more on target than Fledgling or something, that is really getting at this as an immigrant. But again, there's no reason why Jewish people should be persecuted for this, or Mexican immigrants or something. But vampires really are bad, right? I mean, so there, it seems like there are limits in how political we could get out of this.
Yeah, but I mean, there are certain works where we are forced to empathize with the vampires a little bit. We are forced to get inside their heads, even though what they do is obviously wrong and illegal and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But they have to. They're vampires. They can't live if they don't kill people.
It is the dilemma.
I know.
The vampire's dilemma. A cousin of the prisoner's dilemma.
You know, I was struck by, I was doing some reading about the earliest Nosferatu, and in that movie they had introduced the idea that vampires die with sunlight. And I was just thinking about how sometimes, you know, like sometimes vampires are supposedly can't see their shadows, yet shadows were such part of all three of the Nosferatu movies, played with shadow, or they can't see their reflection in the mirror. They have to be invited inside, you know, all of those tropes, and how some of them make it into, you know, a certain director or writer's vision or don't. I think it's interesting, those choices that they make.
Well, I feel like we're out of time, but I do think we could do some after talking to maybe go over a few more of our vast vampire media experiences. So if people want to experience that, go to patreon.com/prettymuchpop. Thanks, everybody. I hope, everybody should see the Nosferatu film.
Definitely.
I don't think you have to see the silent film. I mean, if you're into that kind of thing, and
I'm interested
in Werner Herzog. Like, he's somebody that I'd like to learn more about, but this was not a great introduction to his work as far as I was concerned.
I'm glad I saw it.
But yes, and it seems like we have a 3 out of 4, or at least 2 out of 4 strong recommendation for What We Do in Shadows.
Oh, yeah.
If you're into that kind of thing, let's just say that.
If you like to laugh, then yeah, certainly. But if you're not into that.
If you're already paying for your Disney Plus subscription, why not?
Sarah, I don't like that you're taking shots at me like this. Like, what is going on?
You love it. Come on.
I laugh all the time. I laugh all the time. I laughed this morning, goddammit. I laugh, sir. Man.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Pretty Much Pop is part of the Partially Examined Life podcast network. Get more Pretty Much Pop at prettymuchpop.com. Get bonus content for every episode at patreon.com/prettymuchpop.